A lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. Producer Darren, push that button.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
So this is an interesting story out of Olympia, where the city had decided that despite not even following their own regulations, that they would set up this tent encampment, this tent city, essentially, on some city-owned property, specifically a parking lot, where they are handing out actual tents, brand new tents to folks to live there. They're hoping that the displaced homeless people that are currently sort of scattered all across Olympia will come together in this one encampment that they can house between 80 and 120 tents. But businesses there were like, this is a problem for a number of reasons. Number one, you guys didn't follow your own rules. You didn't have a meeting about this. You didn't do any meaningful outreach to those of us who are concerned with this or might want to say something about this. Number two, we've been dealing with threats to safety of our employees as well as our customers, and this is just going to bring more of those problems here. And number three, we've seen some significant property damage because of the homelessness crisis. And now you've just put a whole bunch more right outside of our businesses. This is unfair. And so they had sought a restraining order, and it was granted, actually. Yesterday, a judge in Thurston County said, yeah, we are granting you this temporary restraining order. You're not allowed to include any more people into this tent city. If you've got some people there already, they can stay. We're not going to kick them out. But you can't allow any more people to join until we figure this out. Now, I don't know how this is all going to end, but this is clearly a good sign for those of you who are like, yeah, you know what? You've got rules in place. Why don't we follow them? And that's a problem here. No matter what you end up thinking about the tent cities or the tiny home encampments that are popping out all around Western Washington, push that aside for a moment. If you've put in place an actual plan, a process that includes talking to the neighbors before you put in any of these different scenarios, shouldn't you have to follow them? This was a problem that I personally experienced in the Seattle area in the South Lake Union neighborhood, where the city did virtually no meaningful outreach. They had already made up their mind before they even talked to any of the neighbors, before they put up and wanted to install this tiny home village. Now, I have mixed feelings about the tiny home village, but I don't have mixed feelings about one simple thing. If you're going to put this in our neighborhoods, you owe it to us to hear from us. You owe it to us to listen to our feedback before you come up with your own solution. They didn't do that in Seattle. They didn't do that in Olympia. Now they're paying the price. In Seattle, there's a lawsuit right now by Safe Seattle. They're pushing it. David Preston, one of the leaders of Safe Seattle, the leader of Safe Seattle, they filed a lawsuit trying to stop the tiny home village in South Lake Union from continuing to operate. Because again, in Seattle, just like in Olympia, they didn't follow the rules they had in place. And that's a problem. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Fake news.
So Michael Bloomberg is running for president. He's kind of poo-pooing it a little bit. He's clearly going to run. He says, you know, I haven't made up my mind. Here he is talking with The View.
Well, you'd only run if you could get the Republican or the Democratic nomination. Obviously, the Republican is probably not going to be available, and I don't agree with almost everything they stand for today. Mm-hmm. So it'd have to be the Democratic nomination. And if you want to run, that's what you'd have to do. And I don't know. I've looked at it, and I've said we'll, beginning of the year, focus on it.
Yeah, okay. He's decided he's going to run. He just wants to see if he has a shot. And if he doesn't, he's going to try to figure out how he can use this run to put some more of a spotlight on his virulently anti-gun positions. Now, he tells The View he's not anti-gun, but he totally is. And he tells one whopper of a lie at the end of this. Let's play Spot the Lie.
What I have asked for, and most of my friends who have asked for, are background checks. We shouldn't be selling guns to minors.
We're not.
To people with...
We're not selling guns to minors. Let's be clear about that. That's not happening.
Psychiatric problems or people with criminal records. Other than that...
We have background checks. I'm just throwing that, like, we have them.
The Second Amendment gives you the right to own weapons, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's the Constitution. We're not going to change it.
You literally just told 18 to 20-year-olds they can't engage in Washington State on their Second Amendment rights. But, okay, continue about your love of the Constitution.
And maybe automatic weapons don't make a lot of sense, but if you want to buy a gun and go through the background check process, that's what the law lets you do. And
okay,
I'm not opposed. I'm not in favor of taking that away one bit.
Ready for the lie?
In fact, I had an NRA member came up to me yesterday and said, look, I disagree with you on guns, but let me tell you, I and all my friends are going to vote for you.
There is no way in the world that that happened. You're a liar. Someone's lying. Now, maybe it was the person who told you they were an NRA member and all his friends are going to... That is such a lie. I don't know a single NRA member or anyone who supports the Second Amendment who's a fan of Michael Bloomberg. You think he's lying? Send me a text. 1-800-465-877. It's an unbetter tax resolution hotline. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in the media?
So the Oscars are trying to figure out what they're going to do as it relates to Kevin Hart dropping out as the host of the Academy Awards. He dropped out after they asked him to apologize for like nearly a decade old series of tweets that included some anti-gay language. They were all jokes. I don't think they were intended with nefarious intent. But remember, we now judge past tweets by contemporary standards. Okay, so know that that's how we're judging things now. They did not expect Kevin Hart to say no to the gig once they asked him to apologize. They thought he was just going to come out and apologize and go on with things. So they didn't have a plan B for any of this, as we're now learning from Variety. And they were kind of thrown off guard, which makes me even more proud of Kevin Hart. I'm really proud of that because he's sticking by his guns. You know what? You do not tell me I have to apologize after I've already apologized for stuff when you're not allowing me for any of the context. So good for him for stepping down. And the problem with all of this is, how is any comedian on any show, whether we're talking about this or the Grammys or the Golden Globes, whatever it is, how is any comedian supposed to realistically survive a social justice purity test? Because you've got current social justice warriors, current progressive icons in Hollywood, who all have pasts using language that they're currently ashamed of. Sarah Silverman, Amy Schumer, Chelsea Handler. They all have used the F word as it relates to the anti-gay slur in jokes in the past. And yet they are presented as these beacons of hope in Hollywood from progressives. So now the Oscars, you know what they're trying to do, which I think this is both an awful idea and a good idea. It depends all on how they execute it. They're just going to bring up a whole bunch of different big celebrities to quote-unquote host the show. So they'll each do little skits, kind of like an SNL bit. If they don't do skits and they just... I don't know why you need a host.
I was just about to say that. Do they even need one?
Do an opening number with a funny music video. I like those. You can just do that. And then just have presenters be the big celebrities. They don't need to do a whole big thing. I don't understand the need for the host. The host disappears on these shows after the first 10 minutes of the monologue anyway. Just cut out the monologue and we're done, by the way, instead of going 4 hours.
Just get Ellen to do it again. Everyone likes Ellen.
She's
fine.
You're listening to the Jason Rancher. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. GM announced that they're firing a whole bunch of people as they're shuttering down some plants in the U.S., but they're also trying to retain some tax credits on their electrical vehicles, which might be an uphill battle if you listen to the words of the president. Joining us to take us through exactly what's happening is Fox News Radio's Jeff Manasso. Jeff, sort of standing in the way of all of this is not just the president, but Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming. Take us through exactly what's going on.
Well, John Barrasso, Senator of Wyoming, he's the chairman of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, introducing legislation back in October to scrap this tax credit for electric vehicles, $7,500, in a move that he says would save about $20 billion over 10 years. I mean, that's real money. You look at Tesla, heavily subsidized company. In fact, if it wasn't for the American taxpayer, that company would be belly up. But yet they charge an average, $80,000-$90,000 for the cars. GM's decision to scrap plants and to fire about 15,000 people has people outraged, in particular President Donald Trump, who won over the Rust Belt and Midwest and manufacturing on calls to, revamp the auto industry and revamp manufacturing. And while the company's faced opposition, it's now got its lobbyists. It's loaded with lobbyists that are descending onto D.C. to try and keep this $7,500 tax incentive per vehicle, calling it crucial, even though current law caps the incentive at about $200,000 vehicles, I should say, per manufacturer. So it's a waste of money. That's what most people say. I think that many of us, many Americans, believe that this whole electric, autonomous type of thing is kind of being forced upon us into a future where we're going to have no choice. But when you start to peel it back, those of us who have gas combustion vehicles, we pay for the gas taxes, yeah, and which funds our roads. Electric vehicles do not have that, and so we'll see. President Trump is not keen on the $7,500 tax credit. You look at the state of Michigan. Federal officials that represent the state of Michigan, they're not keen on supporting GM and these tax credits for vehicles that people don't want. You look at the Chevy Volt. It's been scrapped because nobody's buying it. So if there's an argument out there that if you build a vehicle that somebody wants, you won't need a tax incentive to get people to buy it. People will just buy it and make it affordable.
Yeah, I feel like
I feel like that's been completely
lost in all of this. And I love that point of, I think there's a loud segment of a smaller population that's calling for these cars because they like the environmental aspect to it. And I totally get that. But the fact is, consumers over and over and over again have said virtually no to almost every single electric car. When we're talking about purchasing it in a meaningful way, they're still going to the same types of vehicles.
Well, we should also point out that while if you drive electric, it's going to be very good on the environment for you and for that vehicle because it doesn't consume any gas. But the carbon footprint on that vehicle to manufacture is actually way more dirty, way more heavy in terms of that carbon footprint. It takes a lot to build these things with the batteries and the nickel mining and sending it overseas to get charged. So those cars are actually a lot more dirty than the cars that we drive.
So what are the prospects of this actually staying in place when you've got the president and a lot of senators on the side of scrapping it?
You look at D.C. in what's going on, and little pork projects that are stuck into bills, and these lobbyists that are descending onto D.C. I don't know what the prospects are. I think that President Trump is a staunch critic of this. I think that he's going to do everything that he can to avoid the taxpayers having to subsidize cars that people don't want, particularly when companies, GM, are closing plants. We'll see. I don't have an answer for you, but I think that there's going to be some serious pushback.
Yeah, and something tells me just the context as to when this is happening and GM, pushing for this at the same time that they're closing plants is not going to bode well in their favor. But we'll find out, of course. Check out FoxNews.com as we continue to follow this story and see how it develops. Jeff Manasseh, thank you so much for joining me. Appreciate it.
You bet.
You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. Don't forget, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. It's an Unbetter tax resolution hotline. We'll send you over a link to my latest blog. Please read it. Please share it. It's about the Ellensburg Republican, Matt Manweller. He rips into the Seattle Times. You're going to want to read his comments and share it with your friends and family. Text RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. The Jason Rantz Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show on AM 770, KTTH, and 94.5 FM. On the Greater East Side, Seattle PD officer Adley Shepard was fired after punching a drunk, handcuffed woman who had just kicked him in the face. 4 years later, he actually finds himself back on the job after an arbitrator said he should not have been fired to begin with. Now that decision has produced some significant shockwaves, I suppose, in Seattle. A judge overseeing the federal consent decree is demanding answers on how this happened. And both the mayor and the police chief are wanting the decision to be overturned. So what exactly does this all mean for Officer Adley Shepard? Well, let's ask him. For his only interview following this controversial decision to reinstate him, Officer Shepard joins me in studio. Hello. Thanks for coming down.
Hello, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Are you supposed to talk to us?
I have not been reinstated. I've called the city several times, trying to get clarification. As of Friday, I was told by the Seattle Police Officers Guild attorney that it looks like the city will be appealing the binding arbitration.
And unless they find the arbitrator didn't follow the rules, they don't really have. It doesn't seem like they would have a case because they agree to this arbitrator, as did you and the Seattle Police Officers Guild, correct?
Yes, that is correct. You know, we've waited a long, long time for this. This case has been delayed and pushed back and pushed back. At one point, the FBI looked at it, and it took them a year. It came to find out during arbitration that no investigation was done by the FBI for that year.
So what were they? What was that about? You think it was just delaying?
Yes. Yes. It's kind of, you know, upping the pressure, upping the ante in me. And a lot of this is political. There's no way around it. Just from the beginning of the case.
Well, let's go to the beginning just to refresh everybody's mind. I don't want to relitigate everything, but the woman in question, Mieko Durden-Bosley, you got a call on June 22nd of 2014. There was some sort of domestic disturbance, correct?
Yes.
So you showed up. Take us through what happened.
Well, like you said, not going to relitigate the case. And if the city's going to appeal, you know, I've been advised not to actually get into those details. It is on video. A lot of information is already out there. I believe I even provided some.
I will say what happened then in this video. You end up, she was resisting arrest. You put her in handcuffs. You put her in the back seat of the patrol car. She's clearly resisting, and there's some, you know, taunting language, I suppose, on her part. At one point, she kicks you in the face with her boot. You end up punching her one time in the face to, I don't know if they would call de-escalate at that point, but to stop her from further attacking you. Is that a correct assessment of generally speaking, what's on that video?
Yes, I used reasonable and necessary force to stop the attack on me. I was injured.
From the kick to the face?
Yes, I was injured. I had documented injuries. A lot of that was left out. And that's
and I've seen some of the documents of suggesting that you had some sort of acute trauma to your jaw.
Yes. And that's why I'm here, Jason, is trying to get my story out. You know, going back to the initial investigation when evidence, manufactured evidence, was given to WSB or Bob Bragg at the State Academy, use of force expert.
Washington State Patrol, WSP.
Washington State Patrol actually handled the investigation, but the use of force expert opinion part was given to Bob Bragg at the CJTC. But the evidence that was provided to him was manufactured. They gave training, saying I had this training, and it wasn't. The training was developed as a result of this incident, so I didn't have the training.
Sure.
And so Bragg, even he didn't have my statement. He even said in his report that this is not an accurate statement. I mean, this is not an accurate opinion because I don't have all the
facts.
He
didn't have access to all the information.
Yes.
And I saw that as well in the documents that, you know, he's presenting an opinion based on not necessarily the full picture.
But after he got my statement and the rest of information, he changed his opinion, saying that my use of force was reasonable and necessary and within policy.
Because that's really what this was sort of about, where this idea of, according to SPD policy, you violated it. And at the time, Chief Kathleen O'Toole said that this is not in basically the spirit of our policy.
Yeah, but you, yes. And then you have investigators that knew that I'm not going to say investigators, okay? I'm going to say administration personnel that knew that information, but at no point did they make an effort to actually take it back to the prosecutor or Bob Bragg. My attorney had to actually give him this information. So if I would have got, if this would have turned out different and I would have been convicted, I would have been sitting in jail for 2 years, and there would be exculpatory evidence out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was folks in law enforcement, they know better, because that's a Brady violation. That's something that, you can't be working in law enforcement if you're doing those things with people.
And you weren't prosecuted. There were no charges filed against you. Again, part of the reason why King County at least didn't present any charges was they didn't have evidence of criminal activity.
Yes. And even the assault on me was never investigated. It's the only assault on a police officer in the city of Seattle that's never been investigated. I'm talking about investigated at all. Nothing was investigated against her actions, against me, my injuries. Nothing was presented to the prosecutor's office. So everyone is like, well, she spent a couple of days in jail because there was no investigation.
Just joining me, Officer Adley Shepard in studio of the Seattle PD. His status is a little bit unknown now. He was originally fired for his punch of a woman who was being investigated for some sort of domestic disturbance. She kicks him in the face. He gets fired. An arbitrator just recently said the firing was it went too far. He's been ordered to come back as a police officer. And also, I believe you've been ordered for back pay, correct, for the 4 years that you've been gone?
Yes.
Some form of payment for the time that you've gone. You alluded to, didn't allude, you said it, it was political, all of this, how you were handled. How so, and who's behind the politics of it all?
I wish I knew, because I had filed a complaint, I believe it was last April 19th. I filed a complaint with Office of Professional Accountability asking why the assault on me was never investigated. That investigation is still ongoing.
4 years later.
Well, I'm sorry, a year and a half later. So that investigation is ongoing. It's been put off and put off. At one point, Andrew Meyerberg,
Director of OPA.
Yes, Director of OPA. He took that case away from the investigator and held on to it for like 4 or 5 months. And I've been doing repeated public disclosure requests after. And here they are just hiding, Seattle is supposed to be all about transparency, but where is it? And where is, why I'm here, Jason, is not, it's for my family. Every time this comes out in the news, every time, this story breaks, it's another attack. And it's something else my kids and my wife have to deal with.
What have they said?
It's kind of like, are you going to be in the TV again? Or a teacher or a kid or someone says something to them. And it's 4.5 years. It's 4.5 years. And, we have a system. It's called innocent until proven guilty. And this is due process. I don't have this is my opportunity to talk to you. But officers don't have that opportunity. They don't get to tell their stories. So the politicians get to kind of, maneuver. I understand I'm a pawn. I'm a pawn in this game. And I am being used and moved for the bigger purpose here.
Which is what? What do you think the bigger purpose is?
Just look around. It's just the attack and law enforcement. We are people, we get hurt. We bleed, we cry, just like everyone else. And the bigger purpose here is, it's over my pay grade, but I could have my, my ideas, but it's political. It's kind of like a distraction, I think, from the real, from what's really going on.
Would you concede, outside of you acting within the rules of use of force, would you concede the optics are really bad? You've got a woman who's clearly smaller than you in handcuffs getting punched, even after she kicks you. Do you think the optics are bad because people maybe don't understand the police experience? Do you think that it's fair to say just from an optics standpoint it doesn't look good? Or do you think, you know what, actually, no, what happened is what happens a lot, and this is what we deal with?
Jason and I have had to use force or punch a female twice in my career. And both times I got sent to the hospital. The first time, I got bitten down to my finger.
Yikes.
Okay, down to the bone, and my hand got ripped open. It's violence. It's ugly. It's always bad. There isn't an officer that wants to go out there that I know of that wants to go out there and use force. It's the last thing. But these things do happen, and I understand. Yes, it's not easy for someone to stomach.
Yeah, it looks bad.
It does. I've got two little girls at home. I've got a wife. I've got a mother and sister. I was raised just around women, great women.
Yeah.
I've never hit them. I've never, and I understand, like, hey, it does look bad. You know, this big black man, using force.
So do you think there are racial politics involved in this, that if you were maybe a white man or a woman, this would not have happened?
Well, here's the thing. I just paused, okay? And it would remind me of Ron and Don show. I used to listen to them. but, at one point, Ron actually called me, thought that I was this white officer. And he's like, this white officer hit this handcuffed black woman. And he was going off in his little tangent until, he was actually corrected. But then he still didn't believe. He had to go watch the video. And then mm-hmm. he's like, well, it's black and white, so I really can tell. But it's, media has a responsibility to actually, hey, let's get down to the facts, because I do really think there are some lazy journalists out there who just don't take the time to actually do some research and some investigations.
You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. That's Officer Adley Shepard of the SPD. He was fired for use of force, but he's now back on the job somewhat thanks to an arbitrator who has ruled in his favor, saying the termination of his employment went too far, but now the city is going to appeal the arbitrator's ruling. If you want to learn more about this story as we continue talking with Adley, please text the keyword RANTZ, RANTZ, to the number 1-800-465-8770. If you want to support Adley Shepard, text the keyword RANTZ, RANTZ, to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you my latest blog on the topic for you to read and, of course, post and share. We've got more with Adley Shepard coming up, but right now. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show in the Online Trading Academy studio this morning. Adley Shepard, SPD officer, joins me in studio as we continue our conversation about his firing. And then, of course, the arbitrator saying, no, the city of Seattle went a little bit too far in terminating him after he was involved in a use of force incident with a handcuffed woman who had just previously assaulted him by kicking him in the face. Adley, what is the biggest misconception when it comes to your story and how it's been portrayed in the media?
It was a script, and it was put out there, and it was fed to people, and no one read past the headline, and it was fueled. And there's so much more to it. We just don't have enough time today. And it'll probably make you and everyone else just kind of wonder about, mm-hmm. The government here, what's going on. Because even with this decision was made by the arbitrator 3 weeks before it was actually released. Okay? And I guess the guild in the city decided that, hey, we are going to hold off in it because of the contract. And I could understand that, where, politics to get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Officers need to get paid. Okay? They're doing great jobs. They're living in truckloads. They need to take care of our officers. But I want to, please let me know what's going on.
Yeah.
It would be nice.
Well, how does it feel knowing that it would appear that the judge overseeing the federal consent decree is incredibly concerned about your rehiring, yeah, if that ends up happening, and that might get in the way of this contract. When you first saw that, what was your reaction?
And that's politics. I don't want to speak about the judge, but there is, you know.
And let's be clear, there's some stuff you can't get into because of your status as an officer.
Yeah, and, you know, but someone in a position like that, knowing the American system of justice, I would expect to, because this is a slippery slope for everyone. It's a slippery slope for unions. It's a slippery slope for average American citizens. Slippery slope for my rights.
Yeah.
Just due process, you know. We're beyond the lynch mob mentality here. And I finally had my say. The arbitrator looked at it. She looked at almost everything because she didn't even get everything. And she made the right decision. I'm not going to argue with her decision. Do I totally think it was the best outcome for me? No, I don't.
Why not?
Because it kind of goes back down to those things. You know, it's just so much, Jason. I'm just really trying to move on here. I guess I'll just leave it at that.
Can you effectively be an SPD officer with this in your past just because of how much attention has been put on it? Do you think that it's going to impact your job?
This event doesn't make me. It doesn't define me. You know, like Spark President Kevin Stuckey always says, you know, we're going to take our story back. I'm going to take my story back because the image of me that's projected out there, that's not me. Anyone who knows me, you know, like when I was terminated, like, you know, we received about $40,000 just all over from GoFundMe, from just folks just pulling in money. And, you know, and if I was, you know, if I felt like I did something wrong, I wouldn't get that. If anyone else, and these are from my peers, and these are from the community, perfect strangers. And that was the support I was getting. So
when I heard that from some of your colleagues over the last few years, just saying good things about you, they may not like how this all went down, but they've generally said that you're a good stand-up cop.
Yeah, and that's what means the most to me. It's not, you know, political or whatever. You know, it's your peers and the way that they look at you. And I've heard so many great things said about me. You know, it's usually at a eulogy or something like that where folks usually come out and say, I was actually able to actually hear some of that, and it really affected me. And it's, you know, it's why I'm going to keep on fighting. I'm not going to stop here. You know, I'm going to fight for justice. I'm going to fight for our rights.
At the same time, Chief Carmen Bess and Mayor Jenny Durkan both asking for this to be overturned. They're you know, they've led the charge in trying to get this arbitrator's decision overturned. What's your message to them, particularly Chief Bess?
It's binding arbitration. You know, its morale is low. Even with this contract, officers are still leaving. At a certain point, we need a leader to step up, to say the right thing, to do the right thing. Everyone always throws the guild behind, you know, under the bus. You know, it's like the powerful Seattle Police Officers Guild. The Seattle police chief should be the one supporting her officers. She should be the one out front. Don't put it on the guild. The guild, you don't ever heard of the King County Officers Guild. You never hear about them. You never hear about any other department around here, their officers' guilds. You only hear about Seattle's. It's because their leadership will not step up and do the right thing.
Do you regret anything that went down that night? Could you have done it differently?
Yes. Yes. You know, in hindsight, yes. But when you're there in that moment, and those are your options that you have, okay, 1.056 seconds. That was the time from the minute I was kicked to the time that, you know, I had delivered or used force. 1.1002 use force has already happened. I was kicked and I responded. That's how fast it happened.
And that was like a natural reaction from training.
It was natural. And you know, all the experts said that. So, and it's like Pierce Murphy, the the former OPA director. After Bob Bragg had changed his opinion, he went shopping for a use of force expert, and he goes down to California and has a telephone conversation with the guy over the air. Nothing is written down. Nothing mm-hmm. is transcribed. And he's using that as a use of force expert, saying that, oh, what did you give him? This is a police department. These are people that are responsible investigating officers, and they're doing this kind of stuff.
Why fight it? You've been doing other stuff in the last 4 years. Why not just say, I'm going to move on. I'm not going to deal with this. Why fight to be a cop again?
It's my dream. It's my dream. And, you know, if not me, then who is going to happen to someone? I wouldn't wish this on anyone.
Officer Adley Shepard, you're moving forward on this. You're going to fight for, you know, due process on your side. We'll see how it ends up going. It's a weird city, Seattle, and sometimes what you think is just isn't, and the opposite is true as well. So I think everyone saw the video, came out of it like myself, like, doesn't feel right, but that doesn't mean it's not according to the book. And, you know, an arbitrator comes forward and says this punishment was too much. We would listen to the arbitrator in any other case, and yet somehow, some way, this time, it's not appropriate. So I hear you on your concern over the process and what might be going on behind the scenes that we don't yet know about. You're probably not supposed to be here talking to me, but you're telling your side of the story, which we appreciate. And, you know, we put out the open invitation to anyone who's involved in this to also come out. You'll get the exact same hearing that you did.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've not been reinstated. Yeah. I've called.
Are they answering your phone calls?
Oh, no, I've left messages, though. You know, and the guild doesn't know anything. So I guess they'll appeal. And, you know, I just hope some labor unions and just moving forward in the contract. This is a concern for all officers.
There you go. Officer Shepard, thank you so much for coming by. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Jason.